What is up, cyber and crypto homies? Today is July 25th of 2024, and this is episode 117 of the Cybersecurity and Cryptocurrency Podcast. I'm your host, Eric English. All the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely my opinions and do not reflect the opinions of my employer. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at CyberCryptoGuy. All right, so we got some fun stuff to talk about today. I'm not going to harp too much on CrowdStrike because I think that's pretty much getting all the news these last few days, and rightfully so. And thank your help desk people next time you see them, because they've really been working their butts off to get everything back up and running, and it's been quite the fiasco. So if you haven't thanked your help desk people in a while, this week is a great week to do that. I do want to talk about an article that KnowBe4, or a blog that KnowBe4 posted about a potential infiltration of their company by a North Korean hacker. So we'll talk about that a little bit. We're also going to talk about some of the Windows updates for July that caused a few issues, so get ready for that. And also want to talk a little bit about some open source tools to kind of tinker and have fun with if you're into that kind of thing. So we'll start with probably the most interesting story I've seen in quite a while is KnowBe4. And they accidentally hired a North Korean hacker, apparently. And the pictures of this person were AI generated, all kinds of crazy stuff. And it was really wild to read KnowBe4's blog about how they, uncovered this. So, KnowBe4 did background checks, they allegedly verified the references that this person provided, and they even conducted 4 video interviews to ensure they were talking to a real person. However, they later figured out that that person had submitted a U.S. person's stolen identity to dodge the preliminary checks, and also used AI tools to create a profile picture and match the face during the video conference calls. Wow. You want to talk about sophisticated? This is pretty wild. So if you're not familiar with KnowBe4, I'm surprised if you're not, but they do, security and awareness training. They do phishing modules, training modules, all kinds of cool stuff to help train your employees on what to watch out for, and you can do phishing tests and all kinds of stuff. So that's kind of the company itself and what they do. And so it was really interesting to hear kind of how they uncovered this. So apparently they got an alert from their EDR software, their endpoint detection and response software, and it apparently reported there was an attempt to load some malware from the Macintosh workstation that was sent to this new hire. Well, the malware was an info stealer malware, apparently, and it was trying to basically target data that's typically stored in web browsers. So I guess, from what they were saying, maybe this guy was trying to get data, from the machine, from people that used it before him, potentially, leftover credentials from any previous browser sessions or anything like that. Maybe the IT department was setting up the computer and, all kinds of stuff like that. And like they were using their admin credentials, and maybe they could pull it out of the browser cache and things like that. So that's apparently what he was trying to do with this info stealer malware. So they apparently confronted the new employee. And all of a sudden, he had a bunch of excuses at first, and then all of a sudden stopped responding altogether. So pretty wild to see a story like this, and that it's this close to home. And it kind of makes you wonder, how much this happens, and maybe we don't realize it, right? And of course, the bad guy used a VPN and all that stuff to make it look like he was coming from the U.S. and all those kinds of things, and set off a bunch of red flags. And yeah, apparently his excuse about the malware was that he was following some steps on his router guide to troubleshoot a speed issue. Yeah, all right, buddy. Good ruse there, huh? And all of a sudden you get some info stealer malware on your computer? Sure, that makes total sense. parts. But shortly after that, when the new employee became unresponsive, KnowBe4, of course, just cut off all access. But pretty wild story to see, you know, this kind of thing. And, you know, it's more common than we realize, too. And KnowBe4 has some kind of key takeaways about their background screening process probably wasn't as good as it should have been. And they maybe didn't, you know, on the references, they said they were all email-based referrals or references. And I guess from now on, they're going to try to do, you know, phone calls to the referrals. But who's to say, you know, they can't just make some AI answer the phone and answer the questions about, you know, whatever it is. So anyway, that's a pretty crazy story and hits pretty close to home there. And I know what you're thinking. There's a joke in there about the company name. They didn't KnowBe4, did they? Ha ha ha. All right, that was a pretty bad dad joke. All right, there's some other news about some Windows updates from July that apparently, if we didn't have enough issues, right, with all the CrowdStrike blue screening and stuff, well, apparently with this Windows update, oh, and by the way, with the CrowdStrike blue screening, if you did get it fixed, oftentimes your machine would boot and you would need your BitLocker recovery key. Isn't that great? So talk about a disaster and a total nightmare. Well, apparently some of the Windows updates that recently came out in July are also causing a BitLocker recovery screen to pop up during boot. The KB is 5040442. Now they're saying you might see a BitLocker recovery screen. Of course, you have to have BitLocker running on your device, of course, right? But they're saying it does not commonly appear after updates, so it's one of those maybe kind of things. But essentially, you had to enter your BitLocker recovery key to unlock the drive and boot normally. Well, that's, you know, just one more, you know, major slowdown that we've had over the last 2 weeks. The CrowdStrike debacle, BitLocker causing issues there, and now more issues with some Windows updates. So they're saying this affects Windows 11 and Windows 10 and all the Windows Server versions all the way back to 2008. So yeah, quite the mess there. And, you know, if you were dealing with these and then you saw the CrowdStrike issues and had to redo these BitLocker keys again, whew, I feel bad for you. Apparently, too, from what I was reading, in one of the newer builds of Windows 11, I think it's 23H2. Whatever the latest one is going to be, they are going to enable BitLocker by default, which is an interesting step by Microsoft. I was really surprised to see that, but at the same time, I think, you know, the Mac computers have been encrypted by default for quite a while now. So what's interesting, though, is Macs just make it so much more seamless. I don't think I've ever had an issue, you know, booting up my Mac or anything, or having to get some recovery key or BitLocker key or anything like that on a Mac. But in Windows, of course, you know, encryption and security has always been an afterthought in Windows, it seems like. And so they're just tacking on all these quote-unquote features into Windows and, you know, not realizing, hey, we should have had this from the beginning and built it in from scratch. So, you know, this is why something like BitLocker is kind of laid over top of Windows and an encryption drive. But I also kind of think when it comes to drive encryption, really, as far as threat model goes, I mean, unless your company has a lot of stolen devices, is BitLocker really that great of a security mechanism? I think it's debatable. Like, if your user base is pretty good about keeping their laptops secure and you don't really get a whole lot of stolen, you know, machines or anything, maybe BitLocker isn't really necessary. Now, on the flip side, if you have a lot of stolen devices, of course you need BitLocker, right? But, you know, for companies that have a bunch of desktop computers, like, you know, do you really need to have BitLocker? And then BitLocker on your servers, too? Most servers nowadays are virtual. Is it necessary to have BitLocker? Maybe. It seems like, though, physical access and physical theft is, you know, much less likely than some sort of remote theft and remote hacking nowadays, right? Russians aren't going to come to your house and physically steal your device, typically, or to your place of work, for that matter. I really think that, you know, your time is probably better spent on email security, perimeter security, EDR, MDR, XDR, all those kinds of things. Not really drive encryption. Now, there are some solutions where you can have like encryption on the fly, right? Encryption in transit, where that, I think, could be a lot more useful. And or, access control where it's encrypted unless you are a certain user, right? And if that particular user accesses the data, then it becomes decrypted, right? So that kind of encryption, I think, is good. But whole disk encryption, if the physical threat is not in your threat model, it's probably not worth putting on the super high priority list. All right, on to some other topics here. I wanted to touch briefly on some kind of cool open source security tools that, if you enjoy tinkering around with new stuff and just kind of learning and exploring security, there's quite a few things out there. And, one of them that I've been using quite a bit is called Wazuh, W-A-Z-U-H. And Wazuh has been super cool. It's like a SIM, kind of an XDR, MDR, EDR kind of thing. It's just really cool. It's kind of cool to tinker with. And the other one that I've been really getting into lately, it's a tool called Shuffle. Their website is shuffler.io. And this is an open source SOAR tool and automation tool. And I've really been tinkering around with this, and it's like, wow, this is actually pretty slick. Now, I've always been a little skeptical of SOAR platforms because I feel like you have to have a pretty secure, or not secure, pretty mature security program before you can really do SOAR and automation like this. You really have to have your security tools nailed down, your processes, your procedures, your policies. Like, you got to have it all laid out. It's got to be pretty buttoned up, in my opinion, for SOAR to really be, successful. But this does have some really cool stuff, with ticketing, and also you can, if you use Azure, 365, whatever, you can, if there's a risky sign-in of some sort, you can force the user to re-authenticate. You can do all kinds of really cool stuff. And I've been just kind of barely scratching the surface of it here, but I can see some instances where, if there's a login from a foreign country in Azure, that you require the user to, multi-factor re-challenge them again and just make sure that that is a legit login. There's also other automations where you can, block certain IP addresses and all kinds of stuff so that they cannot log in from those areas. You can block things on your firewalls. You can create tickets. You can do all kinds of just really, really cool stuff. And again, I don't get paid by these people, but it's just cool to tinker with. They do have a free plan. They do have a paid service as well. The free tier is 10 workflows, 50 applications, 5 users. And if you really need to, that gets you 10,000 app runs per month. Now, if you need to go way above that, they have a paid version that's $960. I'm not sure if that's a month or what, but you get unlimited workflows, unlimited apps, unlimited users. It's pretty much wide open. There's 300,000 app runs that you can do with that, so quite a bit of automation that you could get there for a pretty I'd say cost-effective price there. But even just the free one, just to get started, 10 workflows and 50 apps, you could really build some cool automation here. So I'm going to be tinkering with this quite a bit. You can plug it into Wazuh. You can plug it into pfSense. So if you have all these open source tools already in your home network and whatnot, you can plug Shuffle into those and create some automations there as well. Or if you're more enterprisey, they tie into Azure, they tie into G Suite, they tie into Cisco firewalls and all kinds of stuff, right? It's super cool to see. And, I've really never, in my career, never really messed with SOAR that much. So just haven't really had the budget, number one. It's typically always super expensive to go with a SOAR platform from a Palo Alto or a Rapid7 or whatever. But this is a free and open source one that you can tinker with and get better at it and learn it and understand, what workflows you could actually implement, and it could really be a building block to do a lot more SOAR either at home or at your business, right? So really a whole lot of just cool stuff there. So shuffler.io is the site for that. So go check them out. It's pretty slick. It's at least fun to tinker around with. All right, some crossover kind of news. Another crypto exchange. Guess what? They got hacked. This one's a DeFi or decentralized finance crypto exchange called Dydex, I think is how you say it, D-Y-D-X. And on Tuesday, they basically their, I guess their older trading platform was compromised somehow. So, you know, they warned all the users not to, you know, go to that site. They did say that the smart contracts on that site were not compromised and that funds are safe, which is, it's a little hard to believe, I guess. I don't think that they really know the scope of this full thing yet. So who's to say that that compromise isn't further than what they think it is? But essentially what happened is they're saying this was a pretty interesting attack. It was a DNS hijack attack, which you don't really see that a whole heck of a lot here. But it looks like here that, you know, this is a part of the Squarespace DNS hijacking attacks. And they're hijacking DNS to redirect to phishing sites and wallet drainers. So yeah, that's pretty interesting here. And they're saying that the domains that were originally registered at Google Domains were left vulnerable after being forced transferred to Squarespace last year following an asset purchase agreement with Google. So also too, guess what? My favorite thing. During that transition to Squarespace, multi-factor was, guess what, turned off. Man, when are we going to learn about leaving multi-factor on? You shouldn't be able to turn off multi-factor. I don't know when we're going to get to make this a standard everywhere. It should never be allowed to be turned off for any account, period. But what do I know? So anyway, they apparently have, you know, implemented a fix for the DNS resolution, but they're still saying due to caching, the issue may not be fixed for all users, blah, blah, blah. And that was a few days ago, so by now it's probably, you know, up and working. Apparently they've got a version 4 site that was not affected, but their version 3 site was affected, whatever that means. So I guess they've updated their platform since and still had the old version 3 up and running for whatever reason, and that got compromised. But again, one more reason to not leave your funds in the exchange just in case. You really never know when these hacks are going to happen. You don't know how bad they're going to be. You don't know if they're going to steal everything or not steal anything at all, apparently, in this case, which, I don't know. I guess with DNS hijacking, you would think that they would redirect to a phishing site, right? And capture credentials for that exchange and then try to sign into the exchange themselves as that user. So yeah, you know, it's interesting. They say that a wallet drainer was also one of the redirects. So it makes you wonder how many wallets got drained, right? So be very careful using any kind of online crypto exchange. These things are very, very, very high targets for bad guys. This is the number one target for them because there's no regulation. There's no nothing, right? So these exchanges are kind of left up to their own, you know, security mindset. And like, hey, we don't really care about security. We just want to make money. And even if you do have a super secure site and you forget to turn on multi-factor, then, you know, the same kind of stuff happens. So yeah, it's unfortunate, but it is what it is here, I guess. All right, folks, that's all I got for today. I'm not going to talk about CrowdStrike because everybody else is already talking about it. So we'll leave that one alone. We all know how bad it was. But that's it for today. Appreciate everybody listening, and we'll talk again next week.